Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. I've become what I hate the most.
Your mother?
No. I am now an iPhone user.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, I did warn you.
Yeah, but what do you know? You know what I mean?
Well, was I wrong?
No. No. See, there's two reasons why I now hate myself, among various other reasons. Not only am I an iPhone user, but I also got the latest iPhone, which is not the cheapest. And if you'll remember from my previous rant about people buying, you know, the latest, most expensive phones.
Yeah.
But that's something you gotta learn about me. I'm a raging hypocrite.
Yes.
You know, Norman's upset about the iPhone issue. You gotta hear me out on this one. I think I did say it at the time when I went on a rant about phones. The reason I switched to an iPhone was because of the camera. I'm always being told the cameras are so great, they're so amazing, particularly on the phone I got. Apparently the front camera is really good. And that's what I wanted. So I went for it.
Yeah. It's not good.
Everyone, you know, you always get iPhone users being like, you know, oh, it's superior, it's so much fucking better. No, it's not. No, it's right. I've used Android and iPhone now. I can tell you it is not.
Yeah. Like,
Apple's just not as good, in my opinion. It's the only thing I can say for this phone, right? But by the way, switching it over was a fucking nightmare. It was a fucking ball ache to do.
We were actually sat with two iPhone users. And this is before you got it. And I was saying, it's not gonna be easy. Have you even thought about that? Switching everything from Android? And they were like, no, it's so easy. It's so easy. And it fucking wasn't.
No, I feel like Apple make it incredibly difficult for you.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare.
It's right? All strategic. So Apple are like, you have to put in so much effort to get it.
Yeah,
over,
they're trying to.
You're never going
to
want to change
it. That's what I was going to say. It doesn't make any sense for them to make it difficult, but they feel like once you've done it, you're not going to go through it again.
Yeah,
right. I'll tell you, I will be going through it again. Not just yet. Like I've said to Neil, it's fine. I've got my bearings with it. I can use it.
Yeah.
But the only thing after the fact of going through the initial, you know, meltdown, trying to get it all sorted, after using it for like a week, I feel like I can make a comment.
Yeah.
It's so not user friendly compared to Android. It's deliberately more difficult to do things. On an Android, you just press back. On the Apple, it's like you've got to actually press a button to X off or go back.
Right.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot more steps to things. Why you can't clear all your tabs at once, I do not understand. That's bizarre. The battery is terrible, even though apparently it's meant to have a good battery on this model.
That's right. Before you got it, I was having an argument with an individual at work. They're an iPhone user. They've always been an iPhone user. And I've always been an Android user. I've had one iPhone. I think it was the first iPhone to come out. And back then, you would pay 40, I think it was 40 quid a month for a contract. You got the phone for free.
But you're paying for the phone in your contract.
Yeah. And then every 12 months, you'd get an upgrade. I got this iPhone because everyone were raving about it. I got it. I used it for about a week tops. And I was like, this is fucking shit. So I sold the phone and I put my SIM card back in my old one. And I just continued paying the 40 quid a month. That's my knowledge of iPhones. And I argued with them. I was saying, oh, do you enjoy charging your phone four times a day? And they were like, no, battery's really good.
No, that iPhone batteries were always really, they were notorious for it. They're terrible. But I'd heard over the years they had improved, they got a lot better.
Yeah.
Not my fucking phone.
No.
It's terrible. Absolutely fucking shocking.
And
right?
And this to do with the Apple camera is amazing. No, it's not.
I'm not I'm not seeing the big hype. It's a good camera.
My phone's at least 5 years old. It's a Galaxy S21.
It's
and adequate. I'd say my camera's better than yours.
The camera, look, that was the main reason I got it, okay? Part of the iPhone, right, so to me, they're outrageously priced, right? But when I looked into it, for what I needed to get the newer phone and all that kind of carry on with the camera I wanted, it wasn't, I knew I had to spend out a bit more than I usually would.
Yeah.
And it actually turned out to not be too bad buying a refurbished phone, not buying new, not doing that.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, lads, now they've had an iPhone, I've used the Apple product, I've gone to your superior fucking product.
Yeah.
And I've been an Android user for years. I can say, and you can't say shit to me. I now have the right to say, fuck yous, yous are wrong.
Yeah.
Android is 1,000 times better. There's no competition. And sorry, just to do with the camera thing. Before anyone goes, you know, the Android users, well, you could have just got the latest Galaxy. The cameras are amazing. I know they are, but they are very expensive.
Yeah.
I cannot justify that money on a phone.
Yeah, the one I'm looking at getting next, it's the Galaxy S26, and it's somewhat like the Ultra Pro. But it's the reason why I'd get that, obviously the camera's good, but it's got 1 terabyte of storage and it's got 18 gigabytes of RAM. That's fast for a phone.
Yeah. No, but you
but that's going to cost me about 1,600 quid for a phone, a refurbished phone.
Yeah. The point is, I made a mistake. And any Apple user who's going to tell me, I'm using it interchangeably between Apple and iPhone. The iPhone users are the worst of the Apple users, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You can't tell me anything now. I've come to your side. It's shit.
Yeah.
I don't understand this cult following. This fucking, there's nothing better than iPhone. There is.
That's the other big difference between the users. Someone who has an iPhone, like I know you won't, but someone who has an iPhone, they get AirPods, they get a MacBook Pro, they get, you know.
They want the branding.
Everything's Apple. Whereas if you're an Android user, you'll use JBL headphones or Skullcandy headphones. Yeah. And then
there's no jack in me phone as well. There's no earphone jack.
So you have to use AirPods.
That is insane. No, I don't use AirPods. I can just use whatever brand I want, but it has to be Bluetooth. Like, what the fuck is that? There's no fucking jack for it.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe I should have double checked that, but to me, it's a standard in a phone.
Yeah. Like a charging port.
That is wild. I did check the charging port. Apparently, Apple have now switched to C-Type. I wouldn't have got it without that because I'm not getting another charger. And apparently, their chargers always break and it's in the whole situation. I'm not doing that. But I can't use wired earphones with my phone.
Mm.
This is insane. I'll do you one better as well, right? So all the fucking iPhone elitists being like, oh, you should get an iPhone. It's so much better. Yeah. Mm. They're then making fun of me because I got the latest one. Because I was looking at it as...
Bougie.
I got called bougie, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll take that actually. I was looking at it as, I want the latest phone. It's the most up to date. It's going to last me a little bit longer in terms of the operating system. You know, all that fucking carry on. Why wouldn't I? Like, once I looked at the refurbished price, I was like, okay, it's more than I want to spend, but for the camera, I'll do it.
Hmm.
Why am I now a bougie bastard? So I'm too good for the iPhone users that I know, apparently. I've got absolute notions. Can't win.
No. So, we got a shout out this week.
We do indeed.
This week, we have Emily.
Emily? You know what it is about Emily?
Mm-hmm.
She's not immortal. She's not immortal. She's M-mortal. She started a new category, Neil.
M-mortal.
M-mortal.
Okay.
M-mortal. See,
M-mortal. Right.
Well, it's basically immortal, but immortal.
Yeah.
You don't need to like punch it so much, Neil.
Well, I got Gremlin.
Gremlin.
Gremlin. Have you got another one?
Well, the name Emily to me just sounds like a posh British child. That's all I think of when I hear the name Emily. Oh. No, I know she's not, but that's it, Emily. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Emily.
Well, I've got one. It's not posh at all.
Okay.
Flemily.
Flem.
Flem.
Flemily.
Flemily.
See, I did it there. Flemily.
But the other Emily I have is Emily. Well, Friends.
That's what I was thinking as well. The posh British child, but then also it fits in very well. But the Emily.
Yeah. On Friends.
Yeah.
It says the wrong name.
I take the Emily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Gremlin. Gremily. Gremily.
Gremily.
What about Gremily? Gremily. See, I don't say it properly because of my accent.
Yeah, I actually mimicked how you said it.
Yeah.
I didn't say Gremily. I say Gremily.
Gremily. Gremily.
Gremily.
Which one were you landing on?
I mean...
Phlegm?
I wouldn't go with phlegm. I'm not quite sure how you got to that.
M.
Just the M.
Yeah.
Phlegm.
Yeah.
Illy.
I was like, right, M. I weren't thinking of the illy. Just the M.
M. Illy. As an M. I love you.
M. No, you're going too nice with it. We don't do that.
Oh, okay, sorry. So just phlegm. Go back to phlegm.
Yeah. You phlegmy bastard, you.
All right, so Flemily, thank you. We appreciate you. You know, Neil, I've been thinking about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've kind of decided to, you know, do a little promo for Patreon and the rate and review shout out at the end of the Patreon shout out.
Yeah.
We don't want to keep annoying people, so we throw it in at the end.
Yeah.
But I kept doing it more of a promo. You know, more like if you guys want your episodes early and ad-free, which I stand by, if you want them early and ad-free, head on over and join Flemily.
Yeah.
But like you've just said, our kind of shout outs are about, you know, being a bit of a dick to people.
Yeah.
Why am I trying to sound a bit nice when I do it? Why aren't we just saying to them, leave us a rating and review, yez bollockses.
Yeah. Or you'll get some fist if you don't.
Well, I'm not going to threaten violence now.
Oh.
I'm just going to kind of generally insult them.
Yeah.
You know, I think we should kind of, moving forward, why aren't we just like, give us a fucking rating and review, please and thank you.
Yeah.
Yous pricks.
Well.
How do you feel about that, lads? You like? I think it's a bit more in keeping with our theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking get over there.
Fucking do it.
Like.
If you haven't already, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Please.
Like, it doesn't cost you out. Just click the fucking.
Do it. Come on.
Like, but if it's YouTube, like and fucking subscribe.
Come on now.
It doesn't cost you anything.
What's going on?
Just have a heart.
Yeah, please. I just fucking bought an iPhone. It's ridiculous. I'm in an awful state. But thank you. We appreciate you.
So, what have you got for us today?
Today, we are going to be talking about Daniel Lee Corwin.
No.
No. Just no to Daniel.
No, I don't know that one.
I like the name Daniel. I don't like this Daniel.
Oh no, Daniel's boring.
You don't like? I like that name.
No, I knew like fucking half of the people I grew up bastards. With were called Daniel.
Yeah.
That's Daniel, Kyle.
Oh no, not Kyle.
I had loads of Kyles.
Well, did you?
Yeah.
I knew one.
Scott. Fucking loads of Scott.
Don't mind the name Scott.
If you took away the name Scott, Daniel, Kyle, there was barely any lads left.
What about the Garys?
Simon were another one.
Fuck Simon. What about Gary? You're English. There's a decent amount of Garys floating about.
Not at my age.
Oh.
No.
I think, you know, our kind of age group was the last run of Garys, though. There's no one really younger called Gary, is there?
I didn't grow up with many
Garys. I know
Garys.
One, but he's not that much younger. But I was still a bit shook when I heard the name.
Go on. Daniel. What do you do?
In 1988... 21-year-old Wendy Gant was a student of Texas A&M University. Around lunchtime on the 20th of October 1988, Wendy heads to her car to leave the campus. But as she reaches her vehicle, she's confronted by a man holding a knife. He grabs Wendy and forces her into the car. He binds her wrist behind her and ties the ligature to the seatbelt. He gets behind the wheel of Wendy's car and drives her out to a wooded area on the outskirts of town. I tell you, it's a real kick in the bollocks when they abduct a person in their own vehicle, isn't it?
What, because they're using their fuel?
Well, it's their vehicle. But, I mean, yeah, fuel's part of it.
Yeah. But, like, don't take me too far.
Don't adjust me seat.
Oh, yeah. Because, right, that is a pet peeve of mine. Like, I know if you're using someone else's car, you adjust the seat. It's safety. But, you know, it's adjusted for you. But whenever your dad uses my car, he adjusts the base, the back, he tilts it forward.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, he never adjusts the mirrors. Seat and mirrors, I'm okay with. But he adjusts the seat in three different ways. He doesn't adjust the mirrors. He wears my prescription sunglasses. He changes all my radio stations.
That's the one that gets me. I think it's like, you know, whatever, get comfortable.
Yeah.
The radio stations to me is hilarious.
Yeah. And my car was about to hit 200,000 kilometers on the mileage.
You were excited for that one.
I was going to use it as fucking like Patreon. I was going to do a video, like make something funny about it, recording it while I'm driving.
Mm.
I'd got 4 kilometers left, parked it up. And that night, your dad came up. Can I borrow a car?
That's dead on what he sounds like.
Yeah. and I was like, fuck sake. So lost that.
I love how you said, like, it's a massive deal to you.
What?
Like hitting the mileage. That genuinely upset you.
It fucking did.
You really wanted that, didn't you? And he took it away from you.
Yeah.
So abducted Wendy in her car.
Hmm, bastard.
Now, once he arrives at this remote location, he takes Wendy out of the vehicle, ties her to a tree, and sexually assaults her before slitting her throat. He leaves her seemingly lifeless body tied to the tree, bleeding out. Although Wendy's throat had been cut so deeply that she could not talk, let alone scream, she was still alive.
Fucking hell.
Once confident that her attacker had left the scene, Wendy manages to untie the ligatures and makes her way towards the road. She felt that if she was going to die, she at least wanted her body to be found. Wendy reaches the road and, thankfully, a construction worker who was driving by did stop to help her. He gets on his radio and calls for emergency services. Once in the hospital and out of immediate danger, Wendy has a couple of requests to make. She motions for them to hand her a pen and paper, and on this paper, she writes down two things. The first was, "Somebody go feed my horses," followed by, "Get me a sketch artist." I tell you, the woman has her priorities in check, taking care of animals and seeking justice. Fair play, Wendy.
Yeah, but seek justice first.
What do you mean seek justice? The horses need to eat.
Yeah, but she could have wrote that second.
Well, how do you know she wasn't even late leaving campus that day to go feed the horses? It could have been urgent.
Yeah. But wouldn't someone automatically... Right. Once it's gone about, but she's in hospital,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't someone be like, better feed her horses?
I mean, you would hope, but...
Mm.
I'm pretty protective of my two lads. You know?
Hang on, they live where they eat grass.
So if they're in a stable, you need to feed them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, I was just going to, like, with Norman and Ty, like, if we're away, my dad takes care of them. And he always does a great job.
Mm.
And I trust my dad to look after them. But I'm always still, like, worried that they're okay. You know, is everything all right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
So, good for Wendy. Like I said, fair play to her, Neil.
Yeah.
Now, assuming they first fed the horses... They then call in forensic artist Karen T. Taylor. But again, Wendy can't speak. So they work together through Karen asking her questions, and Wendy would nod to confirm or deny, as well as writing down the more specific details. Which I imagine this must have been fairly difficult, as Karen stated that she kept the questions quite open-ended as not to influence. She also showed Wendy FBI reference photos to get a more accurate representation of the attacker's facial features. Karen said that after being shown the photos, it was like Wendy's memory had been refreshed. She was all in. And given the circumstances, it was amazing how well they were able to communicate. Once the sketch was finalised and released to the media, it took just 1 hour for the police to receive a call. The call came from a corrections officer who said that he was sure it was a previous inmate from the prison that he worked in, and his name was Daniel Lee Corwin.
This episode's moving fast, isn't it? Committed the crime and is fucking caught already?
Oh, well, you know, sometimes we do this, Neil, and then we'll loop back round.
Oh, okay.
You know, don't right. you worry about okay. it. I'm not going to diddly out of an episode this week.
Usually you'd have looped back round by now. So I thought, oh, shit.
All right, I'm keeping you on your toes then. Mm. You know, don't worry though. You'll get the fucking story. That actually makes me laugh. Every time I format it slightly different, you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's not normal.
You're throwing me out of my pattern.
Yeah. How am I supposed to have a flow when there isn't one?
Daniel Lee Corwin was born on the 13th of September 1958 in Orange, California, to parents Phil and Nancy Corwin. The family later settled in Temple, Texas, where Daniel joined the Boy Scouts, was described as a good student, and went on to become a Sunday school teacher.
Do you know when you say Orange, California, is that Orange County?
No, it's a separate place, I believe.
Oh.
Mm.
I've heard of Orange County. Know where the OC is? Oh, yeah. OC, Orange County.
Orange County.
That makes sense.
Mm. His father said, quote, "I never had any problems with Danny. He did what I told him when he should have. He was a good little kid." Which, you know, it's all well and good for him, but that doesn't change the fact that little Danny had been a twisted, sadistic fuck since he was a teenager.
That's when it changes.
Well, even as a child, you know when you look at a kid and you can just tell they're a little shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Danny. That was little Danny.
Yeah. Once that testosterone starts kicking in with the mental illness, game over. The sexual side of it.
Yeah. Just testosterone, is it?
Well, it is, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, they can be completely normal as a kid, but once that testosterone starts kicking in, it draws out that mental illness.
It's that damn testosterone, isn't it?
Tie someone up to a tree and slit the bloody throat. I blame Marilyn Manson.
Many do. Many did. Don't think you can blame Marilyn on this one, because back in the 1970s, while Daniel was still in high school, he was found guilty for the attempted murder of a fellow student. Her name was Brenda Evans, and the attack was nearly identical to Wendy's. Daniel forced Brenda into her car and drove to a gravel pit where he then sexually assaulted her. Following this, he forced her out of the car, slashed her throat, and stared into her eyes as he plunged the knife into her heart before leaving her for dead. Now, incredibly, Brenda also survived the attack.
How?
I believe the underwire of her bra had helped. It had shielded some of the damage from the blade. As for the throat slit, incredibly...
Yeah.
I don't want to use the word lucky, but you know what I mean when I say that.
Yeah, like you can survive from getting your throat slit, but stabbing the heart?
That's what I'm... The underwire of her bra, it must have just been very... Again, I don't want to use the word lucky. Well-positioned for where he had stabbed. There's no way to word that without sounding...
Yeah.
Horrific.
I've got a way to word it. You've got an edge on us fellas.
Do you know this is the thing though as well? You've got a slight advantage over me in the podcast because people expect you to just say things horrifically.
Yeah.
I feel like if I word it poorly, they're going to be like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do your research.
Whereas you can just be like, fucking hell, you know? And people are like, oh, Neil. So Neil.
I think the one what gets me is I'll say something and you'll be like, that is just batshit crazy what you've just said. But then when we put it out, there's people going, I agree with Neil.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
I don't back down. I think the rest of yous are batshit crazy. But I love yous anyway.
Mm.
Now, although Brenda could hardly speak due to the wound to her neck, She managed to utter the words, "Daniel Corman did this," while in the ambulance.
It's very specific, isn't it?
Specific. That's, I mean, she has to be. She's literally said what she can manage, and that is, this is the person who did this to me. What else do you want her to say, Neil?
Well, no, no, no. It's just, and you got your throat split. You wouldn't think they'd be able to get that out. Like, first and middle name in him.
What, first and last?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, in the movies, you'll see it, they'll just, in blood, just put, like, a D.
There is a case like that, where the person, before they died, wrote in the blood.
There was one, I can't remember what the case is. I'm hoping you cover it one day. I don't think they died, but they thought they were going to die. So they, like, pulled they'd like pull some of the hair out, and they'd put it like in the loft door and stuff like that, like all around the house.
Yes.
They were just leaving parts of them.
Yeah, David and Catherine Burney. It's that case.
Oh, no.
Well, it is.
Oh. Is that the Leaf one?
No.
Oh.
David and Catherine Burney were an Australian couple who were hideous beings. Just fucking diabolical.
I don't think you need to bring the looks into
it. Not because they're Australian now. Not saying that.
I'm going to say, there's no need to bring the looks into it.
well, they weren't the most attractive people, but I just mean just them as people. We were talking about this the other day. Do you ever like see someone who's absolutely stunning, but their personality is so hideous?
Yes.
It can turn you off them.
Yeah.
Again, not that Dave and Catherine had much going for him to begin with, but...
See, I'm kind of numb to that sort of aspect. Like, not to that aspect, but being from where I am, you will see someone...
Where are you going with this?
No. You'll see someone... No, right. Any Northern lad will have been through this at some point. Northern lads, comment wherever you listen. If this has happened to you, you will see someone and they might be like 5'4", petite, beautiful.
Why 5'4"?
I'm just saying, they're not like built like a brick shit house, like a rugby player.
No, they're not sturdy. Yeah. They're not sturdy.
Yeah.
Go on, say it, Neil.
Right? But then they open the mouth and they're like, "You minge teasing bastard." And it's like, where the fuck did that come from?
I don't fuck with Northern women.
Yeah,
they'll sort you out. They will fuck, I'm telling you now. Northern women are some of the fucking strongest women. Yeah. I mean that mentally.
Yeah.
They'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
Don't try it. Legends.
What I was getting at is that the image doesn't go with what comes out of the mouth.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, 5'4", petite and gorgeous.
Walking around saying you minge teasing bastard.
Was it gorgeous, you said? Is that beautiful? What word did you use?
Stunning?
Stunning? I don't know.
I can't remember.
No, it's just the 5'4" really threw me.
It was a bit very of all specific. Right.
Yeah.
That's more what I'd say. A bit of all right.
Would you say that when you were younger?
No,
mint. Absolutely mint.
Sick.
Sick.
She's sick.
She's fucking, she is ill.
Illest. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, sick. She's sick.
So sick.
I'm going to go and talk to her. And then you run back.
Yeah.
Fucking sounds like Johnny Vegas.
Anyway, back to the case.
Mm-hmm.
For the attack on Brenda, Daniel was sentenced to 40 years, but he only served 9.
How?
The reason for this is because Texas had a rapidly growing prison population at the time, and they had to release some people, but maybe some of the wrong people.
Well, there's literally no room in the inn.
Pretty much. They were struggling just to house everyone, you know?
So someone with attempted murder record was released after 9 years.
And a horrifying case at that.
Yeah.
You know? There was also the sexual assault and multiple injuries inflicted to her.
But TV license not paid, they'd still be in.
I'm going to piss you off even further now.
Mm.
The prosecutor in the trial for the attack against Brenda, he said that there were people who didn't even agree with Daniel being charged with rape.
Did he rape her?
Yes. Quote, "There were people so convinced about his good character that they questioned hers." You have to remember, Daniel, he was the good little Christian boy who always sat front and centre with his family at church.
So as a priest.
No, no, but I'm just saying that's where some of these fucked up, twisted views were coming from. He's this good little Christian boy. He couldn't possibly have done it. It must have been her. She is making this up. She's trying to destroy him.
Devil
woman. For whatever fucking reason you think she would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Devil woman.
You going to give us a little song, or are you?
What?
Devil woman, that song.
What song?
Devil woman.
Who sings it?
I can't remember.
I don't know it.
You do know it.
I do not know it.
Right.
Don't tell me. That really annoys me. We've done this before where you were like, you know who Ron White is.
You do know who Ron White is.
I fucking don't know who Ron White is.
Right.
About a year later, and I'm still going to say it to you, I do not know Ron White.
I will play Devil Woman for... Right, okay. It's even in a telly show we watch. Do you know Carshare?
Yes.
Do you remember when he goes on a date with the other one?
Whoa.
The other co-worker, and your one gets a bit jealous, and then the song is playing in his head, and it's Devil Woman.
No.
You don't remember? I don't know how many times you watch that show. Now, after his release, Daniel obtained employment as a cabinet maker. His employer was a man named Ben Pruitt, who had taught carpentry to Daniel while he was in prison. So he knew what Daniel had done and still wanted to give him a second chance. Now, I'm not quite sure how to view this man. On one hand, I like that he wanted to give someone, you know, that second chance, and he obviously believed in rehabilitation.
Mm.
But maybe not a murder attempting rapist.
Yeah, he's a prick.
You know what I mean?
I'm not torn. He's a prick.
But to be fair, I think he may have begun to second guess his choices. He started to suspect that Daniel may be behind other attacks in the area. He also recalled Daniel coming into work the day following Halloween of 1987 with cuts all over his hands. But don't worry, we'll get to that. Now, within Wendy's car, they found a single fingerprint not belonging to Wendy, and it was a match to old Danny Boy.
Mm.
After a search of his home, they found pieces of rope, two knives, and a maroon backpack which Wendy had described Daniel having carried during the attack. Do you know what came to mind when I read that?
Me playing with that rope yesterday?
No. How the fuck are you going to attack someone while wearing a backpack? That's a hard look to pull off. I hope to fuck he wasn't one strapping it. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Because can you just picture there's a bit of a scuffle during an attack?
Yeah.
Whether it's two people fighting or someone attacking, you know, a completely innocent person. Backpack just swinging from side to side as you're going, as there's the scuffle.
No, but you're saying one strapping it?
If you're one strapping it, it's flailing all over the gaff. It's falling in front of you as you're trying to fucking do shit. It's not a good look.
I thought you were taking the piss because you seem to have it in your head that the cool kids at school wore both straps and the saps wore one strap. But when I was at school, you one strapped it to look cool. You could even buy a bag what was just one strap what crossed over and Velcroed.
Yeah, the knobs.
No, it was Velcro. Like,
I'm not suggesting the strap is made out of knobs. I'm suggesting you're a knob.
For one strap in it?
Yeah.
Why?
It's not, there's nothing wrong with just flinging it over your shoulder, having the one strap. But I know exactly the type of kid you're talking about. Thinking you're 10 men because you refuse to use two straps. That's what's annoying me.
The only time I used two straps, and this was, again, it was some sort of fashion statement. You would use two straps, but the strap would go on the inside of your elbows and hang like down past your ass and would just be bouncing as you're walking.
That's incredibly annoying. In 1989,
year I was born,
Daniel pleaded guilty to attempted murder for the attack on Wendy. He was found guilty and sentenced to 99 years. Wendy's father described the 15-minute hearing as a, quote, quiet ending for such a violent event.
Can I just get your opinion on something real quick?
Of course.
So you're against the death penalty more than I am. But if you're sentencing someone to 99 years,
yeah,
wouldn't you rather just execute them rather than sentencing them to 99 years?
What do you mean, wouldn't you? You mean, do I feel like they should be, or do you mean as the judge?
Like, so this is something I've been thinking about, and I've been trying to think of the most PC way I can say it on the podcast. But what's the point of sentencing anyone to life or anything like that? Like, if they're essentially naturally just going to die in prison,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't you just
sentence
sentence them to death?
You mean it's, yeah, like a different kind of variable of the death sentence kind of thing? Different variation?
No, I mean, just sentence them to death. Save the taxpayers money.
It's not saving, no, because we've had this conversation before, Neil. You have it in your head that's saving the money, but there's a lot of money that goes into sentencing someone to death. There's the whole appeals and everything. It's a lot.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You're
just staring at me.
Because I never know with you if you're going to start this whole, like, you know, combative thing with me, or if you're going to go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you just leave. It's a 50-50 toss-up of what way it's going to go with you.
But yeah, that, like you've just said, right? So they sentenced him to 99 years.
Yeah.
Why don't they just say you're sentenced to death? You're essentially, you're in prison until you die.
Well, that's what I just said to you.
I'm adding that now.
Okay, so you're kind of, you agree that it should be a variation of the death sentence.
Yeah.
Just, death by natural causes.
Just like,
essentially.
You're essentially going to be dead in about 30, 40 years. So look, you're never getting out.
Well, I mean, like they'll say that in sentencing, won't they? Like for the rest of your natural life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. But you just wanted official. You want death in the title.
Yeah, death. Yeah.
Mm. On the 23rd of March, 1989, not long following his conviction for the attack on Wendy, Daniel was interviewed by the prison sociologist for the purpose of assigning him to a particular unit. And during this, Daniel tells the prison sociologist about previous sexual assaults and murders that he had committed. The sociologist already knew that Daniel had been a suspect in the murder of a woman from newspaper articles, so I assume he sort of edged the conversation in that way.
Mm.
The sociologist then informs the Huntsville Police Department, and when the detective came to speak with Daniel, he told the detective that he did not want to do so, quote, without first talking to an attorney, but he did say that he, quote, wanted to get something off his chest. Daniel then spoke with the detective for between 2 to 3 hours before later making his official statement. On the 13th of February, 1987, while out on her daily walk, not far from her rural home in Madison County, Daniel abducted 72-year-old Alice Martin.
Oh no.
He sexually assaulted her in the front seat of his truck before stabbing her 4 times in the back and strangling her to death using a ligature. Her body was later found in a field.
So he hasn't got a type. I don't want to sound crude, but it's not like, you know, young, long, dark hair.
To be honest with you, Alice seemed a little bit out of the norm. When Daniel was a teenager, he was attacking teenagers as a, when I say young adult, 20s to 30s, he was attacking women in and around that.
Yeah.
Alice seems to be the only one, at least that we know about, who
right.
was a bit of an age gap.
Okay.
On the 10th of July, 1987, 26-year-old Deborah Ewing was abducted from the Huntsville Vision Center where she worked. He drove her out to a remote area of Montgomery County where he sexually assaulted her again in the front seat of his truck, and following this, he stabbed her twice in the chest and strangled her to death, again using a ligature to do so. Her body was found 2 days later. At the time, Daniel was questioned in regards to this murder. So this is the one that the sociologist knew about.
Hmm.
Just hours before Deborah had been abducted, Daniel had installed cabinets at Deborah's workplace. So they knew he'd been at the scene, and they also knew that he had a history of violent sexual assault. But when police spoke with him, they said that he didn't appear to have any anxiety. He didn't seem flustered in any way, and he did appear to have an alibi. On the 31st of October, 1987, at about 10 p.m, 36-year-old Mary Reisinger was at the car wash in Huntsville with her 3-year-old daughter, Kristen. Kristen was due to be baptized the following morning, and so Mary wanted to make sure that the car was cleaned up for her big day. As Mary rinsed the suds from her vehicle and Kristen played in the water, Daniel approached in his truck. He exits the vehicle and pulls a knife. He grabs Mary from behind and attempts to drag her into his truck. He didn't even seem to notice Kristen. Mary resists, not just for her own sake, but of course, in an attempt to protect her daughter. Daniel, I would assume, is now panicking, realizing that Mary is not going to go down without a fight. So he slashes Mary's throat and leaves her there to die. When police later arrive on scene, they find Kristen, who had locked herself inside of her mother's car. She was wearing a leotard and tutu, which had become that saturated in her mother's blood that officers actually thought the fabric was red at first. Once the officer was able to convince Kristen that he would protect her, she unlocked the door and jumped into his arms. He said it was the hardest bear hug he had ever received. She didn't want to let go, and asked the officer to protect her from the bad man that had killed her mother. All of Daniel's attacks were spontaneous. They were in public places with potential witnesses. But having surveillance cameras was not common practice back then, and particularly in the area of Huntsville, Texas. Now, if you remember, Daniel's employer did notice marks on his hands following this attack.
Yeah, cuts on his hands.
Which I can't say for sure, but I didn't read anything about him reporting Daniel at the time, and surely he would have heard the news about Mary's murder.
Oh, shit.
I'm not saying he did or didn't.
I am.
But I would imagine Mary's murder would have been pretty big news. Now, back to, or jumping forward, should I say, to 1989, when Daniel confessed to these murders. On the 27th of March, while trying to get more information, officers brought Daniel to the locations of these murders, hoping it would trigger his memory, allowing him to give more detail. The detective drove into the car wash, and he said that Daniel went into a trance-like state, as if he was reliving that night. And the following day, after his memory appeared to have been stimulated, Daniel was able to give a more detailed statement of the attack. And then, on the 4th of April, Daniel accompanied law enforcement to another location, and again, more specifics emerged. When asked why he killed, Daniel said, quote, "I'm just not sure about it. I just don't know."
Yeah, I think he... I think he wanted to rape, and the killing was just to shut him up. Like,
you think it was sexually motivated to begin with? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think. Yeah, I think the killing was just to prevent getting caught for the rape.
Well, fuck if we know, because if Daniel can't tell us,
yeah.
In March of 1990. Daniel is on trial again for the murders of Alice, Deborah, and Mary. Now bear in mind, he's already serving a 99-year sentence for the attack on Wendy. During the trial, three people who had survived Daniel's attacks testified against him, one of which took place when Daniel was 14 and she was 13. Armed with a knife, Daniel entered his neighbor's home where this 13-year-old girl was babysitting, and he did sexually assault her. She was able to identify Daniel as her attacker. He was brought in, given a polygraph test, which the results were inconclusive, and he was never charged.
Fucking hell.
So there's that.
I'm 14, I told you, testosterone.
Well, don't forget the attack on Brenda, which means by the age of 16, Daniel had already committed 2 sexual assaults that we know of, and attempted murder.
Fucking testosterone.
It does make you seriously wonder how many people did he assault that we just don't know. Yeah, I mean, that fucker is already escalating from an early age.
Yeah.
Daniel's parents also testified that, as a child, he had suffered 2 accidental but severe cuts to the head. and Daniel blamed his behaviour on this. He spoke of pressure which he felt in his head, and how it led to what he called a, quote, tunnel vision, which later resulted in him committing these horrific acts.
Excuses.
Well, psychologists suggested that brain damage could be a factor, but was not easily detectable. Which, look, I'm not sure, but I would take that to mean that yes, brain damage can be a factor, but in this case, it's not that severe. He's chatting shit.
Hmm.
On the 20th of March, 1990, it took the jury just 25 minutes to decide that Daniel should be sentenced to death. The district attorney said of him, quote, I think they invented the death penalty for people like him. He's a bona fide serial killer. And I think the events surrounding him point out how lousy the parole system here was in the 1980s. He's just bad, bad, bad. Daniel Lee Coren has been attacking women since he was 14 years old. There is nothing the criminal justice system can do but put him to death.
Yeah. I agree.
Do you know what I think it is with you? You're kind of the same as me. We're not for, against, we don't really know, you know, where to stand on the death penalty.
Hmm.
But as soon as you hear something you don't like, you're like, sentence him! Get him!
Yeah.
Get him gone!
Yeah.
Fuck him!
Do him in.
Like, death sentence!
You know, it's like, so in the UK, you know, people joke about it, but it is a serious issue. In the UK, the knife crime is just, you know, I've made jokes of it. You know, I posted a meme not that long ago in the Facebook group of when did I get, you know, it says,
when did I get stabbed?
Yeah, it's when you're a Brit and you're at a house party, and it's just, yeah, when did I get stabbed?
You love your knives.
But that, if we had the death penalty in the UK, knife crime would fucking decrease.
No, I don't think so for a second.
Well, I think it would.
Mm.
They do it because they know nothing's going to fucking happen. They know they're only going to get a slap on the wrist.
What, you think if someone stabs a person, like slits, like you've had your leg slit.
Yeah.
You think someone should be sentenced to death for that?
No. I'm talking about, you know, these little fucking, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, hard lads fucking going around with a knife in the pocket.
Yeah.
If they didn't have that knife in their pocket, they'd be as quiet as a fucking mouse. But because they've got that knife in the pocket, I've interacted with these idiots.
Little scroats.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Without that knife in their hand, they'd get slapped about.
Yeah.
Them sort of people who, they just get into an altercation and knife someone to seem like the big and to seem like the tough. Them little bastards wouldn't knife anyone if they were a death penalty.
See, I don't agree with that at all. I don't think it would really have much of an effect.
I concur.
Yeah, but what?
I concur.
You agree?
No.
That's what you've just said. You're right. So I get what you're saying, right? You think in an ideal world, it would be a deterrent. But we're talking about Texas, where there is a death penalty.
Yeah.
And didn't stop old Danny boy. Didn't stop Paul.
Yeah, well, the first time he got out after 9 years.
Didn't stop Paul and his big neck. Paul also got out early.
Paul and his neck.
Paul and separate entity.
The neck.
The
neck.
But do you get what I'm saying? I think we had that conversation during the Paul episode.
Probably.
I like how he doesn't even have a full name. It's Paul or Paul and his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you genuinely think it would deter people? Or are you just seriously looking at it as like, ideally? It would.
In the UK, yes.
All right, well, agree to disagree.
Okay. Listeners, let us know. British listeners.
British.
Let us know what you think. If there was a death penalty, would there be less stabbings?
Mm.
I can assure you, yes.
Can you assure me of that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I feel better now, if I'm honest with you. On the 7th of December, 1998, at the age of 40, Daniel was executed by lethal injection. But before his execution, Daniel had a few words to say. He thanked the people who he felt made a difference in his life and apologised to the family members of those who were victims of his crimes. Quote, I guess the first thing I want to do is thank some very special people, Sarah and Sabrina, and for affording me the opportunity that y'all did. It made a big difference in my life. I thank you. Thank you again from the deepest part of my heart. I'm sorry.
Fuck off.
The biggest thing I wanted to say was to you and family, and I know I hadn't had the chance to talk with y'all in any form or fashion or way or manner, and I regret what happened, and I want you to know that I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I just ask and hope that sometime down the line that you can forgive me. I think in a lot of ways that, without that, it becomes very empty and hollow, and that the only thing you have is hatred and anger. I guess the only thing I have to say about the death penalty is that a lot of people think of it as one-sided, but it's not. It's two-sided. There's pain on both sides, and it's not an issue that people just sit there and voice off and say, well, this is a good thing or this is a bad thing. But it's something that, you know, needs to be looked at and desired in each heart.
Is he talking about himself?
I just hope that all of you can understand that and someday forgive me. I want to thank y'all for affording me the opportunity to talk and meet with y'all. It meant so much. Thank you so much for being with me and my family. Thank you. I love you.
When he's talking about going both ways, is he talking about himself? Yeah. How he feels?
Basically.
Get
yeah.
fucked.
So as a whole, that, you know, last statement, I mean, it's a bit rambly, isn't it?
Yeah.
And self-indulgent, like you said, it's, hey, look, I know, you know, I killed and sexually assaulted multiple women. Mm. But it's you, you're empty, you're hollow, you're a fucking hollow shell of a person. If you over there
want me dead,
you need to sort yourself out.
Yeah, but you're...
It's just rambling nonsense.
Yeah, you're dying in a controlled, organised environment. You get your last meal, you get your last words. Them women didn't get the last meal and last words. And they died brutally.
Yeah, I feel like Daniel should have wrote it down. Had to be a little bit more consistent, concise in what he's saying. And got his point across.
Mm.
When he's like, sorry, he's kind of like, yeah, sorry about that. But maybe you guys need to reevaluate.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck off.
Like, how self-centered do you have to be to think, you know, people are going to actually understand what I'm saying here. And people are going to agree. No, they're not. No, they're fucking not. Like, you've just wasted time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some people in their last words, they want to have this poignant moment. And sometimes that can happen.
Yeah.
Not so much with this prick.
You know, like, I have more respect for John Wayne Gacy just saying, kiss me ass.
Yeah, Gacy was just a fucking arsehole. Got on with it. He was what he was.
Mm.
You know, cards were dealt. There's no point hiding it.
Yeah.
Now, following the death of this rambling prick, Wanda Simmons, Deborah's sister, said, quote, I get satisfaction he's dead and not going to get out. I expected him to lay there and die, and he did. William Carroll, Mary's brother, said, quote, he was just an animal. I think it was too easy. Her sister, Sarah Berger, said, quote, he should feel the pain that his victims did, and still do. Alice's grandson, Rick Karanka, said, quote, he's taken no telling how many lives, and he's still got one. A lethal injection will never make up for the damage he's done. Bessie Black, Deborah's mother, said of Daniel's mother testifying for him, quote, I don't blame her for testifying. She was probably a good mother, but she was unwilling to admit that her son did these things. Bessie's husband, Tommy Black, said, quote, I don't blame his parents for nothing that he's done, but I still think, if it was my son, I'd have gotten up there and said, this man took a life. I disown him. You do what you have to do. I'm a firm believer in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
Loosely, yeah.
Yeah. You get the sentiment, yeah.
Yeah, there's different circumstances. Like with him, yeah, fully, you know, disown him. But like, you know, if there's been an accident or... I don't want to give examples of where I wouldn't disown him. It'd have to happen. But something like this, what's gone on for years, and it's so brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like if I was, say if I was a younger sibling or something, I'd change my name. I wouldn't want to be
associated, yeah.
Associated at all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, loosely I agree.
Well, I mean, you can't really say fair. He's not putting any of the blame on the parents, but it's just, if it was me,
yeah,
I wouldn't take away. I'm not blaming you, but I wouldn't, I don't think it's right for you to take away from what your son has done.
Yeah. Like, what are you supposed to talk about around Christmas table, you know?
Now, jumping forward a bit.
Mm-hmm.
On the 28th of September, 2018, on Highway 84 in Rusk County, Texas, a tire blew on an 18-wheeler truck, which caused the vehicle to veer into oncoming traffic. The truck hit an SUV head-on, killing both the driver and passenger. The passenger of the car was 34-year-old Kristen Eleanor Carroll, formerly Kristen Reisinger, Mary's daughter. The driver of the SUV was 33-year-old Shannon Reisinger, so you would assume part of Mary's family, yeah. Or at least married into Mary's family.
Mm-hmm.
So just absolutely fucking horrific to have someone murdered by a serial killer, yeah. And then jumping forward a few decades, you know, this horrific tragedy.
Yeah.
Horrible way for them to have passed away. And yeah. Again, for, you know, something that would have been all over the news again. Incredibly difficult for the family to deal with.
Yeah, the family can't catch a break.
No. But yeah, that is the case of Daniel Lee Corwin. Neil?
Oh. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, I was just... Neil, any thoughts?
Didn't he have a nickname?
No.
See, if I were a serial killer, I'd be pissed if I didn't get a nickname.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd be like, where's my nickname?
I mean, sometimes they give themselves a nickname.
No, I wouldn't do that. That's very fucking egotistical.
But the thing is, with Daniel, right, so there's some killers they want to be a serial killer. They want to be known. They want to be notorious. You know, all this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Daniel did.
No, he...
You know what I mean? I think once he was discovered, he was kind of like, oh, no. Like,
yeah. No, he wanted to abuse women.
Yes. Yes.
Like I said earlier, the killing was just defense. You know, what's the wording?
Yeah, he was doing that to not leave a witness, not to be able to... Yeah. Not for them to be able to identify him.
Yeah. But, yeah, the amount what could have been prevented if they just didn't let him out because of overpopulation in the prisons. Like, fuck me. You know, if it's someone who did like a burglary or something like that, I can kind of understand it. But someone who from the age of 14 was sexually assaulting women and attempted murder, like,
yeah, like when you hear this, like they were the model prisoner. I don't give a fuck if it's, you know, fucking murder or sexual assault. They're bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't apply how much of a model fucking prisoner that they are, whatever that means.
Well, can I just, you know, point out the reason why they're a model prisoner is because there's no women around and they've got people keeping an eye on them all the fucking time.
Mm.
If you were to put women in there, you know, freely, and you weren't fucking watched all the time, there weren't cameras.
I tell you who I would
still be doing the same shit.
I tell you who that could apply to. Someone who was like, you know, non-violent, dealing drugs, yeah?
Mm.
They end up in prison, and with the amount of drugs that flow into prisons, if they're still not dealing, that's a model prisoner.
Yeah.
That's someone who's been like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm just going to get on with it.
Yeah.
Not a murder attempting and murder committing.
Yeah.
Rapist.
But if you were to take like all the officers away, the cameras away, and you were to put women in there freely, they would be doing the same fucking shit.
Mm.
You've took it away from them. And they're not going to do it to a fucking bloke in prison because they'll get the fucking shite beaten out of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I said me bit.
That's all there is to say about old Danny boy.
Yeah. Model prisoner me fucking hole. So, oddity.
The accidental circumcision.
Right.
I can tell, like, towards the end of that episode, I could tell Neil is fading. He's wanting to finish up recording. And that title alone, I can tell, has pissed you off.
Yes. It doesn't make fucking sense.
It quite often happens when we're recording that you reach a point where you're like, right, I'm done now. No, you should be happy. Right, I know clearly you've been bothered by this. You should be happy. It does what it says in the tin, really. We can't really go anywhere from this. You know what's going to happen here.
I'm telling you now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So surgery I've had, hernia surgery. If I went for my hernia surgery.
And they stole your foreskin.
Yeah, and I woke up and I've now got an helmet exposed permanently.
Just hanging about.
I would sue the fucking ass off. I'd be like, I want my foreskin back.
Yeah.
Like,
staple it back on for me.
I was grown quite attached to that fucking foreskin.
Quite literally, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, accidental?
Yeah, do you want me just have at it and then you can...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm fucking... I know I'm going to be seething it.
You're livid.
One. Yeah.
Well, Neil, in the summer of 2018, a man named Terry Brazier was due to have a procedure at the Leicester Royal Infirmary. Terry was to undergo a cystoscopy.
Cystoscopy?
Cystoscopy.
Okay, and what's that?
He was getting a procedure, right? And the procedure involves Botox being injected into the wall of the bladder. This is something that can help with urinary incontinence.
Okay.
You're paralysing the muscle, whatever. Yeah. So okay. It's a good old Terry's getting it sorted out.
Right.
But instead, 70-year-old Terry was circumcised.
So what did they circumcise? So what did they circumcise?
His penis.
No, you just said he was circumcised.
Yes, he was circumcised. No, he was instead of.
Oh, right.
He was instead of having a bit of the old Botox in the bladder wall.
I thought the bell had gone.
They what? Oh, to begin with.
No. What? Because you said he was circumcised. I thought you meant he was circumcised.
No, I was saying this is what he was there to undergo, but instead.
They chopped his fucking
Terry
skin off.
Yes, in that moment he was circumcised. Yes. Terry described the incident as a, quote, real surprise and said, quote, I thought there was something not quite right.
Why isn't he more pissed? I can't fucking tell you, I can't make you understand enough how much I would kick off a fuss.
Yeah.
And I'd be there screaming, going, give me my fucking skin back. Put it back on.
Yeah.
I want that back.
I need that.
I do.
Mm.
And like,
yeah.
I don't want it off.
Yeah.
Give me that back and then get me bladder done.
Yeah.
I don't want to piss myself with my foreskin.
Well, like I said, Terry said, you know, he thought there was something not quite right, but that during the procedure, you know, he was talking to the nurse, you know, and they're kind of trying to kind of keep you calm and whatever, focus on something else.
Won't keep me calm.
Well, he was a bit distracted, like I said, talking to the nurse. And, you know, they're medical professionals. You put your faith in them. So he didn't really think about it at the time.
Would.
No, but what I'm saying to you, he knows there was something slightly off. But
he's
just, again, you're putting your faith in them. So he was kind of like, I assume they're having to go in a different way. They're having to do something else, whatever. He didn't really question it. Because that's the kind of guy that Terry is.
Nah, he's taking it way too fucking easy.
Well, the incident was recorded as a, quote, never event. Which means it was a serious, largely preventable safety incident that should not occur if the available preventative measures are implemented. And it was reported that this was just one of eight that this hospital had that year.
Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you now. I would be looking for the first male nurse and going, get me my fucking foreskin back or I'm having yours.
Oh.
Like, it's one or other.
Well, look, Terry did decide to take legal action over his now foreskinless penis, and he was awarded £20,000.
What?
You okay? Go on.
No, that wouldn't even get me a fucking decent used Beamer. No.
I thought you were going to say foreskin.
I'd want, right, if for an accidental foreskinless
removal?
Yeah. I'd want a brand new Ford Raptor.
Yeah.
An house with some change. So we're talking 300 grand. That was the only way you'd be able to calm me down.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm having your foreskin.
Yeah.
Like, you find this funny. That I would...
It's not funny.
Right.
Find you funny.
There's been loads... In the 10 years we've been together.
Yeah.
There's been loads of times where, you know, it's took a couple of days after the fact, you know, something's happened. And I've said to you, like, thank you. You calmed me down.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it was, what happened, it was you. If you weren't there, I would have got arrested. Or, you know, something, it'd have kicked off.
Yeah.
You've calmed me down. If I woke up and they cut my fucking flap off, my hang on. If they cut my...
hat.
Yeah.
Willy warmer off.
Yeah, me willy warmer. If they cut that off, you wouldn't be able to calm me down.
Yeah.
Not even you. You're the only person who can. Not a chance.
Yeah. Well, again, like you said, you need that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Or me raptor.
Okay, well, I'll pose the question to you.
Mm.
Would you forego your foreskin for a Ford Raptor?
Well, no, I said a Ford Raptor, a house, and some change.
No, but if someone was to offer that to you now, brand new, that's yours, Neil. Well, I'd have to have your foreskin in now, exchange for it.
Now, yeah, because I fucking hate my car.
But you're going to say your foreskin again.
I think... if someone asked me that, I would turn to you and go, would it bother you without the Mickey hat? And if you said no, then I'd have the procedures for my Ford Raptor.
Look, my personal view on it, I think you're the same as me. There's no need, unless there's like a medical reason, you know, the skin's become too tight and they have to remove it, something like that.
Hmm.
I don't understand it. I don't get why you would do it. There's all these myths about skin. That's just not fucking true. Yeah. That's, you know. But having said that, if it was your choice and you wanted it, it's your body. Do what you want. If tomorrow you go, that's it. I've had enough. You stood my way long enough.
Yeah.
I'm getting circumcised. I go, well, have at it. That's, you know.
Yeah.
It's coming to summer. You don't necessarily want a willy warmer on. So Terry said, quote, there's been the jokes, but there is a serious side to all of this. It could have been even worse for someone else. Someone could end up having the wrong body part amputated. This shouldn't have happened, and more importantly, I don't want it to happen again. You go into hospital and put your trust in these people. You don't expect mistakes to be made,
exactly.
especially not ones like this.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the money them bastards are on, and they're going to cut my foreskin off instead of putting Botox on my bladder. That is just insane.
Yeah.
That is like paying a plumber to come to your fucking house to fix a leak.
Instead, they rip a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And just fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The money these doctors are on, and you made a fucking catastrophic fucking error like that.
I have to be honest with you, I do quite like Terry. He seems sound, like his approach is very much, well, it's not the end of the world, but obviously I want to make a point of it for others. But he's kind of a bit, you know, like, like it didn't do me any harm.
I can tell you now I would have got more than 20 grand.
That's what I mean. He did it out of the principle. Clearly to Terry, he's like, I wasn't harmed. Mm. I'm okay. You know what I mean? It's just that you can't be making these mistakes. It was it was purely a principle, it seems to him.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, when you think about it, Terry's got a 20,000 pound foreskin. Not a lot of people can say that.
He hasn't got a 20,000. No, he hasn't.
He doesn't have it, but it amounted to a nice chunk of change, you know? You'd say it down the pub, wouldn't you?
No.
I've got a 20,000 pound foreskin.
But he hasn't. He hasn't got the foreskin. It's gone.
Got a foreskin.
It's been incinerated.
He has a foreskin worth that, though. Like, he did. It was at one point worth that, if you think about it. Like, if you word it the right way.
I would at least be asking, where is it? Where's it gone? Like, if you fed it to a fucking dog or something, where's it fucking gone?
Yeah. By the way, Terry did later receive the correct procedure, just so you know. He did get sorted, but you know,
yeah.
There you go. The Brits running around stealing men's foreskins. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
This was the UK?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was America.
It's fucking Brits again, Neil. Robbing foreskins.
Fucking NHS.
I think I said Leicester earlier, didn't I?
What?
I'm pretty sure I said Leicester.
Yeah, I did hear Leicester, but I don't presume UK because the Americans copied us with a lot of names.
But there's a Dublin, I believe, in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a Paris in Texas, I think. And they've got this stupid little Eiffel Tower and it's like, you fucking idiots.
Is it Tennessee or Texas?
I don't, it's one of them.
Yeah, one of them. Yeehaw!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I no comment. I would have erupted. That's
yeah. I feel like
I'm not speaking anymore on the matter.
During the episode, during Daniel's statement, his final words, last words, should I say? I feel like that's when you gave up on this episode. That's when you'd had enough. And talking about Terry's foreskin, that's really pushed you over the edge.
It's not Terry's foreskin. It's how much money these fucking doctors are on.
It's the lack thereof.
Like, for fuck's sake, I could be a minimum wage worker, yeah? And say it's a stock picker for deliveries.
Yeah.
I have a checklist. I have stuff to check to fucking pick that right.
Yeah.
Surely they have that for a fucking procedure. Why are they just going in with a scalpel and going, well, I'm going to take his foreskin?
That's what they said. It's recorded as a never event, meaning that if all the safety measures are there and had been followed, it should have never happened.
Yeah.
And like I said, that was apparently, it was reported that was one of eight in that hospital that fucking year.
They should lose their fucking doctorate for that.
It's
bastards.
It's pretty shocking. Poor old Terry in his foreskin.
Mm.
Or lack thereof.